Hot diggity dog, what's up everybody? In case you're watching on YouTube, that was our brand new intro video we got. For those of you listening on the usual suspects of Spotify and Apple, I'm sorry you didn't get to see that awesomeness that we just had over there. But for those of you wondering, I am Hogan, one of our lovely hosts on this panel here. I got my buddy Burge back in action with us, and then Manish is down here. Boys, how are we feeling after that? I'm going to go out on a limb and just say dreadful wild card weekend. What the hell was that? Did anybody enjoy any of those games? Manish, I'm going to start with you. What do you got for me?
Well, the only thing worse than the actual games were my picks, but we can get into that in a little bit. So the Eagles won, so there's that, even though I picked against them. But you're right, really boring games outside of the Tampa-Washington game. Hopefully, the four games this weekend are a little bit more entertaining, and I suspect at least a couple will be.
Absolutely. We are hoping for that at this point. I think it was a few years ago that we got like the most entertaining weekend of playoff football in history, where every game came down to like the final play, final kick, or final something. And this was just dreary from Saturday through Monday, pretty much, except for, like you said, the one game there. Burgess, my man. Is football season over as far as we're concerned? With obviously the Patriots season's over, with the playoffs just dreadful so far, should we just pack it in? Are the Chiefs going to win it all again and we can all just vomit everywhere? That's what I certainly
hope not, because that will just be like the capstone on what's been a dreadful 2024 season for me to watch football this year because of the way the Patriots have been. You know, we had that one great weekend. I know exactly which one you're talking about, years back, of like the Super Wild Card weekend was outstanding. The last 2 years now, the Super Wild Card weekend has just featured a lot of non-competitive football. And I begin to wonder if that's something in line with the seventh team, the 17th game. Wondering if it all plays into this entire thing with just a dreadful weekend. So like Manish, I got to think that now that we're narrowing the field a little bit, in most of the favorites won, or like the home teams, the higher seeds won this past weekend, that we're going to get some more competitive football going forward in the divisional round and into the conference championships. And then finally the Super Bowl, because I'll be honest, it's my favorite time of year to watch football, whether the Patriots are in it or not. And if it's non-competitive, I'm going to be very disappointed.
So I guess my follow-up question for both of you that I'm wondering, because you know the NFL is a money-making business. Mm-hmm. They want to pump as much money into their product as possible to get as much money out of their product as possible. Where we're at in this time frame, a seven-team playoff bracket for both sides of the conferences now, where they inevitably want to expand and probably go to 18 games, and you know, more football is just more money for them. Do you see a better product by introducing more teams into the playoffs, where potentially we could go to, you know, eight teams on each side and get back to the first and second seeds both having the buys there? Or are we in a good place where it's seven, the number one seed really is the only one that benefits from getting that number one seed with the buy there? How do you guys feel about that? Verge, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I'm just going to say that when they expanded the playoffs, I was pretty against it, simply because the playoffs were great the way that they were. It was a situation where the mentality of if it ain't broke, don't fix it really fronted where my head was coming from with this. And, you know, I'm not making any money on the NFL. So obviously the NFL, that's the one thing in their mind that they are concerned about. Let's be honest. The three of us are going to watch it no matter what. They do. They have such a grip on the attention of football fans, sports fans, no matter where you look at it. They're going to get us to watch it. If they expand to eight teams like the rest of the professional sports leagues do, well, the NBA and the NHL, they'll be more like that. I'm not going to be a fan of it, but at the end of the day, I'm going to watch. I'm a sucker. I'm unfortunately a sucker, and the NFL just has me, you know, over the bench, right? If I'm going to use a metaphor, an interesting metaphor for that, they got me, and I'm not going to be turned away from it. Look, I'm doing a podcast about it, and my team stinks. The one team that I always used to watch football for, all I cared about, stinks. And here we are talking about the playoffs and excited for divisional round.
Great. Well, I would love to get the image of Burgess bent over a bench out of my head as soon as possible, please. And
got to derail the podcast as soon as I can.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah. 5 minutes in and I already want to call it a night. Manish, my man, is it better if we go, like, was football better when it was only six teams making the playoffs back in the day when it was, you know, it meant more, where it was every game mattered down the stretch? Do you see the seven teams making the playoffs now for each conference? Do you see that succeeding going forward with the misery of this past weekend? Or do you think we could see a better product with either eight teams or figuring out some other way to do this bracket here?
Well, first and foremost, they're not going to contract. So we're never going to go back to six teams. There's just too much money involved. I do think it's a worse product having that seventh team in, because the seventh team, usually is of lesser quality. Going to eight playoff teams to me would be a grievous mistake. I don't think the league is going to do that anytime soon. It took forever to expand from six to seven teams. You just want to be careful. And as Birch said, you don't want to dilute the product like you have, at least in the NBA. I'm not a big aficionado of the NHL, but I know in the NBA, the regular season from a fan's perspective has been diluted. I haven't really watched that much NBA, and I probably won't until a month or so before the playoffs, and then I'll obviously intently watch the playoffs. But you don't want to dilute the product. You know, there's already discussion about how there's too many games on too many different days during the regular season in the NFL. The last thing you want is for eight teams now to make the playoffs, 16. It's half the league making the postseason. So to me, as much as we love football and, you know, fans will still watch because there's a huge betting component to it, I don't anticipate the league expanding to eight teams anytime soon. A much better chance and likelihood that not only will they expand to an 18-game season, but you'll expand it to a 20-week season with two bye weeks and an 18-week regular season. I think that's the direction that the league is headed in. But I wouldn't foresee them expanding the playoffs to 16, 50% of the league anytime soon.
Well, I'm just going to throw it on record that you clearly don't watch the NBA because the Celtics are awesome and your 76ers are crap. I just got to throw it out
there. That might be the reason why I'm not watching.
NHL playoffs, it's like you said, Benish, like the way they do it, if you get to the dance, anything can happen. I don't feel like that would be the same thing in the NFL because they play seven games and anything can happen. Oftentimes, an eight seed will make the finals in the NHL because that's just the nature of the playoffs. That, even if you add an eighth seed in the NFL, that isn't going to happen. They play one game, and more often than not, the better team wins those games. So, I don't know.
Right. We're seeing that in college football as well, too, where they expanded to the 12 team playoffs this year. And a lot of the early games were duds in the college football playoff as well. So it'll be fascinating to see what they decide to do going forward. Again, money talks. And at the end of the day, we could sit here and say, what's a better product? What's worse? Whatever. Roger Goodell is going to sign the check that is going to make him and the owners as much money as possible. And we're going to sit there and we're going to take it up the keister because that's what we do as fans, is we love this sport and we're being bent over benches, as Burgess like to put out there. So enough of this talk, guys. Let's get into the news cycle for this week specifically. And there's a couple of things that I want to hit on, but I think the big one that really kind of is the talk of the town, especially for America's team there, the Dallas Cowboys. We talked in the last podcast about how we didn't really see Mike McCarthy losing this job or going anywhere due to the fact that, you know, they didn't allow him to interview with other teams. And he was obviously not, his contract was up. The news broke that they couldn't come to an agreement and Mike McCarthy is no longer the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, Manish, I'm going to throw this one to you first, because there's a report going around right now that Deion Sanders is apparently all in on this and is meeting with the Joneses, and, you know, maybe they're going to do some crazy deal to get his kid there, because Deion's been quoted as saying, I'm not coaching the NFL if I'm not coaching my son. So is prime time going to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys?
I don't think so. I thought it was very telling. Adam Schefter spoke to Deion Sanders earlier in the week, and the quote that Sanders gave Schefter was very carefully crafted. He said it was delightful to talk to Jerry Jones because there's obviously a healthy respect between the two men, but he also really loves Colorado. To me, that means he's not getting the job. does that mean he's not getting the job because the two men discussed it? And Deion said, hey, look, I really only want to coach my son. And Jerry Jones said, well, you know, Dak Prescott's our quarterback. We're not going to trade away valuable draft capital to move up to try to get your son. Who knows? Only those two men know. Just again, based on what Sanders told Schefter, it was a very small, a short quote, couple sentences. He wasn't definitive in saying that he wanted to stay in Colorado, but I think the way that I read the quote was that he's not going anywhere. Maybe it's a little leverage for him, to get a little bit more out of Colorado, whether it's money, perks, whatever it may be, facilities, who knows. But I would anticipate that Jerry Jones will go in a different direction. Doesn't hurt talking to a guy that you respect that played for you, but at the end of the day, I don't think it makes much sense for the Cowboys. And if Deion truly does only want to jump ship if he's going to coach his sons, then that's not really a good fit right now heading to Dallas.
Right. It would be an absolute spectacle to see Deion doing his primetime dance down the sidelines, though, whenever the Cowboys score. It would be a spectacle. It would be entertainment up the wazoo. We'd probably get a million TV shows about it. But Burgess, my question for you in terms of the Dallas Cowboys now with the past, the present, the future kind of stuff, Mike McCarthy, I had to look this up because I almost didn't believe it when he was let go. They talked to Micah Parsons about this, and he said he was devastated because McCarthy led the Cowboys to 3 straight 12-5 seasons. And that kind of blew my mind because that's what I thought, because I was like, well, they just lose in the first round of the playoffs, so what does it freaking matter anyway? But the fact is, Mike McCarthy was still an extremely good coach in his short tenure with the Cowboys during the regular season. Postseason obviously is what speaks volumes. Are the Cowboys making a mistake by moving on from Mike McCarthy at this point?
See, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not putting the down year this year on him. That team was ravaged by injuries this year, but I felt, and this is more of just an eye test watching them over the past few years, that there were some critical mistakes that were made for this team. You look back a year ago where they lost, I believe it was to Green Bay. They were supposed to win. You had I think it was the year before with the 49ers, with the whole play at the end of the game where they ran out of time when they were trying to spike the ball when Dak just ran and slid. There's been some really, really bad errors in critical moments during his tenure there. I'm on record on the podcast here saying, like, you should have been canned last year after the loss to the Packers, where they had a great season and they end up, underachieving again. That was when I was Bill Belichick to Dallas. I was beating that hammer down. It's the same situation where I look at, like Manish and I a few weeks ago when you were out, Hogan, we're talking about Sean McDermott. Like, has the message grown stale? Have they made it as far as they can with that guy there? I think they probably have. McCarthy's won one Super Bowl. He's always had a quarterback during his coaching tenure. When he was in Green Bay, he went from Favre to Rodgers, and they were fantastic, but they could never really get over that hump to be a perennial winner. They'd always end up underachieving at some point during their playoff runs, et cetera. I think the more interesting aspect to this is the fact that the Bears had requested to interview Mike McCarthy just a couple of weeks ago, and the Cowboys shut him down. That's what made all of us think, hey, he's going to be back in Dallas. They kind of did McCarthy a little bit of a dirty there. Maybe they didn't have their decision at that point yet, but I mean, for them to not have a decision after the season like that to know what direction you're going in, I think that screams a little bit of ineptitude when it comes to making that type of decision. So now they're a little bit behind the eight ball when it comes to the coaching search. You have teams already getting interviews out there, and obviously we have one we'll get to that hired a coach. And I don't know. It's just Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones at the end of the day. He's going to do what he wants for his team. He makes all the calls, all the decisions. We'll see if it helps them out or not, or if it, it sends them into more down years like it did this year. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, to me, this speaks of just based on them blocking McCarthy to interview elsewhere. Chicago put in the request. To me, it really, if I'm like connecting the dots here, I think the Cowboys want to give McCarthy a very short-term extension. Very short term, possibly a 1-year extension, maybe a 2-year extension. McCarthy was looking for more, and that's why they ultimately parted ways, because you just don't block a coach if you have no intention of retaining him. So I think Jerry Jones wanted him back, but he wanted him back on his terms, and McCarthy didn't want to be, who would want to be a lame duck for another year?
Good on McCarthy. Good on McCarthy for standing his ground on that. And, you know, hopefully he gets picked. I think he's going to get interviews now. He's going to get interviews for some of these open jobs. And he probably may even land another job quickly this year even. But, you know, it's just I see Dallas, and I, you know, we talked about Deion Sanders. Like, that seems like a match made in heaven to me. You have the circus that is Jerry's world, and then you have the circus that is prime time, and marry the two in the NFL. The NFL, I'm sure, would absolutely love that. And especially if Jerry Jones does something crazy and trades up to 2, 3, or even 4 for to get, you know, Shadeer Sanders in there. That would be great theater and entertainment value for somebody who's not a fan of the Dallas Cowboys. If I was a fan of the Dallas Cowboys and my team was giving up all this capital to move up to get an unproven guy in a relatively weak quarterback class of the draft this year, I'd be a little concerned about that.
All I know is that.
I'm sorry, Ho, just real quick. The other element of hiring Deion Sanders, whether it was the Cowboys or any other team, is what's your confidence level in Deion putting together a competent staff? I mean, that's really the point that rarely gets discussed. Yes, the head coach is the leader of the organization, but can he put together an NFL caliber staff? I would have serious questions about that.
True. I was just going to say that all I know is HBO would be creaming themselves over Hard Knocks for the next like 5 years if Deion signed with the Cowboys. Like, no other team would be in contention for Hard Knocks for years if Deion Sanders became the next head coach of the Cowboys.
Whoever hires him would be really, right there. Yeah.
Right. Well, that would just, like you said, the circus show with Jones and Deion would just be crazy. But one thing I want to go back to that you talked about, Burgess, was Mike McCarthy underperforming all those years, obviously with Green Bay, and then obviously coming up short with the Dallas Cowboys transition. Phenomenal. Thank you. I will take that. Going to another underperforming coach that we're talking about here, that I kind of raised my eyebrows last year that he was, you know, given the longer leash at this point, is Mike Tomlin. And I know that name might surprise a lot of people in the NFL at this point, because he's had unbridled success. The guy has not had a losing season since he took over for Bill Cowher back in 2007, 2008, if I'm not mistaken.
One of those years, yeah.
One of those years, because 07, okay. He has not had a record below 500, which is, you know, just unheard of, because coaches go through losing seasons. It's just how it works, and Mike Tomlin has found a way to not do that. That being said, Mr. Tomlin has not won a playoff game in 6 straight appearances in the postseason. And Steeler fans at this point have got to be asking themselves, what the hell is going on with this team? Because they're good enough to get to the dance every year, and then they forget their dancing shoes every time they get there. Burgess, my man, is Tomlin officially on the hot seat? And is it growing warmer by the day that he keeps losing playoff games?
I would say yes, it grows warmer by the year that he doesn't win a playoff game. But am I convinced that the Steelers will actually move on even this year? No, I don't. Honestly, I don't think it's going to happen. I have a really good friend of mine, Mr. Pat Sage. I used to work for him, and you probably remember him from our days working at good old Modell's Sporting Goods back in the day. He's a big Steelers fan, and I was talking to him about this, and he actually went as far to say, I would rather they had missed the playoffs this year so Mike Tomlin could get the gate and get fired. They are over Mike Tomlin down there. Now, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you look at it like they're just a consistent middler. Like they're just a team that's good enough to beat the bad teams, but not good enough to compete with the good teams. And every now and then they do end up winning one of those big games, but we saw it down the stretch of this season here. I was one all year. I wasn't high on them, but they were early on in the season. They exceeded a lot of people's expectations with how they were performing. And then as the season went on, they kind of hit a peak and were on the decline, limping into the playoffs. We talked about it last week. If I was a Steelers fan, I'd be ready for something new, even if it meant going into the tank for a couple of years to try to reset everything and maybe start a new culture. It is pretty impressive, the fact that he has not had a losing season in what, 17 years of coaching now. that's impressive. And the amount of turnover that's gone on there, you know, the quarterback injuries when Roethlisberger was there and he was playing Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, you name it, they were still knocking at the door to make get into the playoffs. It goes to the point where I was talking about the NHL and like how like a middling team can go on a run late in the season. It's not going to happen with a team like Midler in the NFL, like the Steelers. It's just the nature of the league. And if I was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I'd be ready for something new. I think Tomlin would get scooped up immediately into a new environment to be a head coach to continue somewhere else if he chose to do that, because he is a fantastic coach. But I think that the message has grown stale. And unless they make a change, you're going to see the continued pattern of 9-8, 10-7 seasons, and 1-done in the playoffs.
So, Manish, my question for you then is, obviously, the Steelers have a fantastic franchise history. They obviously are tied with the Patriots with the most Super Bowl wins of all time with 6. But they haven't really sniffed the dance of the Super Bowl since Ben Roethlisberger and those teams in the late 2000s, early 2010s really kind of phased out, where Ben Roethlisberger's been gone for a while now. They've, like Burge alluded to, they've bounced around from Kenny Pickett to now this year with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Do you see the team turning over a new leaf anytime soon with Tomlin still being there? I guess my question is, what is this offseason? If they decide to retain Tomlin, what does this offseason really show for the Steelers? Where will they decide to roll it back with Russell Wilson again? Is Justin Fields going to get a chance? How does this team's future look in your eyes right now?
Well, look, let's go back 5 weeks. 5 weeks ago, the Steelers were 10-3. They proceeded to lose their last 4 regular season games and then obviously lost last week in the playoffs. So they lost their last 5 games. You can make a reasonably strong case that the Steelers overachieved this year. I'm not sure how many people thought that they would be a playoff team with Russell Wilson and or Justin Fields. They are in a precarious position because they don't have the quarterback of their future. You know, both Fields and Russell Wilson can test the market. Russell Wilson has already said he wants to come back. You know, if I'm Pittsburgh, if I'm Mike Tomlin or their GM, Omar Khan, do I really want to run it back with Russell Wilson? I personally would not. And again, I think Russell Wilson played much better than what most people thought entering this season. But as Burgess said, you know, this is a team, as currently constructed, that I think maxed out at 10 wins, making the playoffs, excuse me, losing in the wild card round. I don't think they were ever seriously a Super Bowl contender, despite the fact that they were playing much better than others thought. I don't think Mike Tomlin's going anywhere. He's certainly not going to agree to any kind of trade. I think he came out this week and said, don't waste your time if you're kind of going down that road. I don't believe, you know, barring something, you know, out of left field, which I wouldn't anticipate because it's out of left field. I don't think the Steelers are going to move on from Mike Tomlin. He'll be back next year. The question becomes, how do they reconstruct the roster? Do the coordinators return? You know, Arthur Smith somehow keeps getting head coaching job interviews. It's the most remarkable thing in the world. You know, he rode Derrick Henry to a head coaching job in Atlanta. He was absolutely miserable, in my estimation, in Atlanta. Completely misused the talent he had. And somehow he, you know, I mean, I have a pretty good idea why he's getting these interviews. His agent is Jimmy Sexton, unless he's changed him. And, you know, Sexton wields a lot of influence. And maybe some of these are courtesy interviews. Maybe these are just interviews to get Arthur Smith back in the mix for a future head coaching job. But in this cycle, he is getting interviews. And, you know, take that for what it's worth. So I guess there's a possibility that he wouldn't return. And then how would the Steelers fill that, you know, that position? You know, you can say whatever you want about Mike Tomlin. He's under 500 career-wise in the playoffs. He's got a 63 winning percentage in the regular season, which is tremendous. He's a future first ballot Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, even though it's been a very long time. I understand that Steelers fans are jaded by him. I know several of them myself, and they would like to move on. I always say the grass is not greener, but I also say, you know, don't be fearful of what's out there. That's an unknown. So if you're the Steelers, if you're Omar Khan, for example, would you like to hire your own head coach? Sure. I mean, what general manager wouldn't want to? However, Khan and Tomlin have worked together for the better part of a decade plus. Khan's been in that organization for that long in various capacities. So I do think there's a good working relationship. I just think they need better players. I know that may seem like a cop-out to some people. But they need you know, the fully committed players, George Pickens, for example, their most talented offensive player, he's got to mature. He's got to mature in a hurry because as talented as George Pickens is, he should be in the conversation for the top handful of wide receivers in the NFL. He's clearly not right now, but he's got the talent, every bit the talent that Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, A.J. Brown, Tyreek Hill, you name the player. From a talent perspective, this guy has it. And the only reason that he slid, I believe, late first round, early second round, was because of the maturity issues he had at college. And even though I think he's improved to some degree in that respect, he still has a long way to go. He's just a very immature player. And it's a shame because he's got the talent to be an all-pro caliber player. That's just one example. But I do think they need to have upgrades from a roster perspective, from a talent perspective. I don't want to say that Tomlin is not culpable because, you know, the buck stops there. He is the head coach. But we are talking about a 10-win team. It's not like we're talking about a team that went 6-11. They just have to find the talent and the missing piece to get over the hump. Some teams find it by getting a new head coach, but I don't think the Steelers are going to go that direction this offseason.
Well, I'd just like to throw out there that if the Steelers do decide to move on from Mike Tomlin, there's a fantastic head coach out there, prospect named Gerard Mayo, that they could just have at this point, who will take them to the promised land time and time again, attested by us Patriot fans here. But interesting that you brought up George Pickens there, Manish, because I'm going to throw it back to you. Let's touch on this very briefly before we move on to news that I actually want to talk about. But Deontay Johnson, a clown at this point, it seems, with his antics throughout the league, got picked up by the Texans after being released by the Ravens, threw a temper tantrum or something in the locker room after the win because he didn't, contribute. I honestly could care less at this point, because this guy is just a joke with how he's bounced from Carolina to the Ravens to Texans. He's back with the Ravens. You explained pre-recording why that makes sense. Tell our fans out there what's going on with that.
Yeah, on the surface, it was kind of an eye-opener. Why would the Ravens claim Deontay Johnson after getting rid of him a few weeks ago? It's actually a strategically smart move by Eric DaCosta, their general manager, because by the rules, Deontay Johnson will not participate in the postseason. He won't see the field. Probably won't even be at the facility, to be quite honest with you. But he is a free agent, and he will clearly not be re-signed by the Ravens. So he's going to go to a different team, and that will help the Ravens when they're accumulating their compensatory draft formula, which is a very intricate formula. I don't think many people understand it. I don't fully understand what goes into the compensatory draft pick formula. It's not an apples-to-apples correlation like I think a lot of fans believe. They believe that if you lose a free agent, you're automatically going to get a second or third round compensatory pick. That's not how it works. Reduce the simplest terms. The formula accounts for the number of players you lose in free agency, and Deontay Johnson will be included in that, and the number of free agents that you sign in the offseason. And that will ultimately determine what your score is and how many compensatory draft picks you get and what rounds they are. So that's a lot of mumbo jumbo to mean this, that by re-signing Deontay Johnson, the Ravens helped their cause in getting compensatory picks in the compensatory pick formula. Again, I think it's a brilliant move by Eric DaCosta. Really smart move. And this is what smart general managers do. You know, again, you see it as a fan, and even as other coaches are probably like, what's going on? But, you know, smart people in the league understand what the Ravens were doing, and they've been doing smart things for a very long time. So it doesn't surprise me that Eric DaCosta did this.
Right. Like you said, it was a smart move. Obviously, if you can get more draft capital at that point, might as well take advantage of it, even though the player himself, I'm on record as saying he's a clown, because he is a clown. Speaking of a team that obviously has some draft capital coming up that we've alluded to, the number 4 overall pick, to be specific, which should have been the number 1 pick. We're not going to get into that again, because I'm going to lose my mind if we have to bring that up. But there was some news that recently happened, if I'm not mistaken. A certain former linebacker for the Patriots, not named Gerard Mayo, thank God, is now the head coach for the New England Patriots. And that, of course, is Mike Vrabel, beloved former player who was most recently a, I want to say a consultant for the Cleveland Browns, if I'm not mistaken. But previous to that was the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, noted that he ended the Patriots dynasty de facto, beating the last time that Tom Brady played for the New England Patriots in the playoffs. He's now our head coach. Burgess, kick us off, man. How are you feeling about your new head coach, Mike Vrabel?
Amped. I am amped about this. He was the guy that everybody expected to be the head coach in New England. You know, we all joked about it in the group chat about how he was going to be the guy no matter what. You know, I'm excited. And he should have been the guy last year. Once he was let go by Tennessee, there should have been no Gerard Mayo experiment, but we don't need to go back into details about that. You know, I watched a lot of his, you know, introductory press conference on Monday, and some of the stuff that he hit on just kind of just resonated. Like, we got to be able to take advantage of bad football. You know, everybody in the building is going to be held accountable for whatever they do. And, you know, you hear those things from a head coach. It was like, we finally have like a legitimate leader back in that position, because, you know, Gerard Mayo clearly wasn't ready for the job. You saw it, you know, you saw some clips from his introductory press conference. It was a much different vibe than it was this time around here in New England. And it just, for me, the allure of him being a former player is just, I kind of icing on the cake in terms of like, feels cool to have him at the helm of the franchise. But those teams in Tennessee overachieved. He was a coach of the year, I believe, in 2021. He got to an AFC title game, lost to Kansas City, I believe. But he's going to establish a culture that brings toughness, physicality back, and it's what's honestly been missing even at the end of Bill Belichick's tenure here. And the fresh voice, I'm very, very, very intrigued to see who he brings in for his coordinators and the rest of his coaching staff, because I think that ultimately is going to tell us the direction that they are going to look to go in terms of how they play the game of football. Now, Vrabel was on record saying, like, they're starting their search for the offensive coordinator. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be quick. There are some names that were tossed around out there, familiar names like Josh McDaniels. Tommy Reese was thrown around for a bit until he was promoted in Cleveland. I'm very intrigued to see. I'm going into it with an open mind. And at the end of the day, if it was Ben Johnson or Mike Vrabel, I was not going to be unhappy about the hire. Now, you go around Twitter and you listen to talk radio about people talking and the fans talking about this hire, and a lot of them are pissed. And I don't understand it. I cannot understand why they would be upset about hiring Mike Vrabel. Oh, he's hiring another guy from the Bill tree or Bill's disciple. I'm sick and tired of hearing that. He never once coached under Bill Belichick. Yeah, he played for him, but he never coached under him. In fact, he got his start under, I believe it was Urban Meyer or Trussell at Ohio State. Like, then came into the NFL and coached under Bill O'Brien. You want to make that connection? Fine. But like, he never coached for Bill. And this is going to be a fresh look at how the team is run. Gerard Mayo was a Bill disciple, coached under him for years. Completely different direction we're going in now. I am excited to see where they go. I don't know how you feel, Hogan. I'm about as excited as I've been for Patriots football in 3 or 4 years.
Well, I can say for me personally, and not to get graphic, you know, like I said, talking about Burgess bent over the bench or anything like that, but for me, when he brought up situational awareness in his press conference, I went from 6 to midnight. I was like, this is what we've been missing from this team. That's what I'm saying, though, is like, how many times did I bring up during the season with Gerard Mayo? Sorry, Manish, I know it's a little graphic for you down there. I don't mean to give you nightmares later on or any of our fans out there. I am married, so please don't get the wrong impression or anything. But anyway, I was saying situational awareness has been something that this Patriots team has been missing for the last almost 2 years at this point, since Belichick left. Obviously, I think Belichick was the master of situational awareness, where players knew at all times, hey, if this happens, this is what you need to do. If so-and-so does this, this is how you react accordingly. I mean, there's that famous clip of Belichick coaching back in the early 2000s where he was great. He grabbed like a defensive lineman and he was like, oh, something about jumping off sides. It's like, how many yards is that? And the player's just like trying to like carry the two, doing the math in his head. And Belichick's like, it's this much, buddy. And for you, those of you who are listening, I'm holding my fingers very close together where it's like it's less than half a yard or like 6 inches or something. It was always the master of, okay, this is where you need to be and what you need to do at all times. And that's the biggest thing with this Patriots team that's been missing, especially in the previous season with Gerard Mayo, where every time the camera panned to him, it was him just sitting on the sidelines like, hey, this is I'm a coach in a game. This is fun. I'm just standing here. And he would just do nothing, it seemed like, half the time, where you saw Belichick throwing pads and talking to players because it's like, do your job. Do your job. So, obviously, now that I've like I said, grossed everybody out with my analogies and everything that I've been saying here, Manish, let's go to you, my friend. I know you were having a giggle fest down there. How are you feeling about the Vrabel hire for the New
England Patriots? I think it's a great hire. I didn't go from 6 to midnight. An interesting turn of phrase there. But I think it was a great hire for a lot of the reasons that you guys just outlined. And beyond the fact that he's beloved by most of the fan base. And Burge, I wouldn't take any of the stuff you see on Twitter or X, whatever it's called, personally, because there's a segment of fans who are going to be unhappy no matter who they hired. So that just comes with it. There's two things. Well, first, when I think of Mike Vrabel, I think of leadership and respect, right? Players respect him. He exudes leader. Everything about him, the way he carries himself, the way he speaks, the way he treats players, the way he treats people who aren't players, that he interacts with on a daily basis, leader, 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 leader. That's, to me, has always been the case. But what I find interesting is that there were two points any potential Mike Vrabel detractors would bring up. Well, he's a ground and pound type of coach. Is he really going to be able to unlock Drake May? And I think somebody asked Vrabel that this week, and he said, well, my best player was a running back, Derrick Henry. So we're obviously, playing to our team's strength, which for that team was Derrick Henry. For this team, we'll see how the offseason shakes out from a roster standpoint, but they clearly want to cultivate the quarterback. So I don't think you're going to see a ground and pound team. You may not, see an air it out team. You could see a team very much like the Chargers, where Justin Herbert kind of dialed it back. They didn't have the best running backs. They, capable guys. J.K. Dobbins did really well. Gus Edwards, okay. But I think you're going to find a really good balance because Mike Vrabel is going to be able to assess the talent he has on offense, even though he's not calling the plays. But he's going to assess the talent, and he's going to devise – he and the offensive coordinator are going to devise an offense that plays to their strengths. And that sounds like such a simple thing, but you'd be surprised how many head coaches do not do that. They want players to conform to their system, and that's why teams like that are usually on the outside looking in when the playoffs begin. The other part of this week from Mike Vrabel that I found very impressive, kind of jumped out at me, was when he was asked about analytics and, what is the role of analytics in today's NFL? You think of Mike Vrabel, you think of an old school guy. You don't think of him necessarily embracing analytics. And he broke it down into three segments. The first segment of analytics is embracing it from a talent evaluation standpoint, specifically from college players. The second standpoint is in-game. Third and short from the 40-yard line, do you go for it? Assessing it in real time and making the proper decisions. The third point, which I thought was the most fascinating, to be honest, because don't really hear a lot of head coaches break down analytics in this fashion, is that he talks about the value of having things like a player's maximum speed during the game, because you've got the chips, a player ran, 31 miles per hour, or, whatever it may be, depending on the position. Matters, but the data that he will collect and the Patriots will collect on game day, they will utilize during the week in this respect. If a player, this is the example that he outlined this week, if a player, has a 90% mile per hour of, 20 miles an hour, again, making up the numbers, he wants to see that specific player hit 20 miles per hour at least once in a practice in the week leading up to the next game. So he wants you to practice at a pace that you would play during a game, and he can quantify that specifically because the numbers are available to him from game day. So he doesn't want to run these guys that hard Wednesday, Thursday, Friday during practice, but one of those days he wants guys to simulate their game day speed. And he can do that in a very specific way by utilizing analytics. So again, you wouldn't anticipate Mike Vrabel saying something like that, because you think of Mike Vrabel, you think a tough guy, you know, you think of grinded out football, but this is a guy who is very flexible, very in tune with where the NFL is headed. And he's used the experience that he had as a head coach in Tennessee. And even though the Browns didn't do particularly well, the information that he kind of gleaned from being around Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland as a consultant this season to benefit his next stop in it, that happens to be New England. I just think that he's a very pliable guy. His mind is very open to different options. He's got a really sound base being a head coach. He understands the fundamentals of football, but he's open to changing and being on the cutting edge. And you can just hear that when you listen to him speak. I think he was by far the best head coaching candidate. With apologies to Ben Johnson, I know, Bird, you love the guy. He's the hot candidate this offseason, this cycle. But I thought that it was ridiculous that Mike Vrabel didn't get a head coaching job last offseason. And heading into this offseason, I just thought he was head and shoulders the best option for any team. And you will see how it unfolds. But I think the Patriots got the best of this group, at least in real time. That's my assessment.
Love it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big thing. Like I said, the only thing that I'm thinking of, like when you bring up the analytics and the stats and stuff like that, as long as they don't get out of whack with all like the Amazon next gen stats, because I don't need to know how like fast a football player's farting on the field or something like that. They throw out some ridiculous stats once in a while. I'm just throwing it out there. Like it's like the miles per hour or the probability of some play or whatever. As long as we don't get like crazy money ball type of stuff.
No, I don't think it's like that. I think, you know, you take all the information and you discern it, you pick and choose what makes sense for you. But, you know, I've always been of the belief that, yeah, you know, some of the stats will show in game mean nothing to me, because there are some subjectivity in it. But that doesn't mean you just discard analytics altogether. There's good information under the analytics umbrella, and it'll be up to Mike Vrabel to kind of pick and choose the stuff that he thinks makes sense and then utilize that during the week and in real time when he's got to make decisions. And it's not just Vrabel. Smart coaches, they don't listen to analytics departments blindly, but they also don't turn a blind eye to analytics, because I think that would be foolish as well. I'm not the kind of guy who goes in head first and just whatever the analytics numbers say, go by that, because there is a feel and a pulse to every game and a heartbeat to every game, and you can't ignore that. So the best coaches are really the ones who can kind of weigh the pros and cons of all this information that's available to them, because there's a lot of good information in there amid all the fluff.
Right. I was going to say Dan Campbell, for one, is just a guy who could give two farts about analytics. He's like, fourth down, F it, we're going for it. I don't care. Bird, just go ahead.
Well, I'll just say my final thought is it's going to be refreshing for me, because I think we are going to see a little bit more aggressiveness when it comes to fourth down than we are so accustomed to for 20 years in New England, where it was like, unless it's you're in the red zone or whatever, like even in the red zone, you're taking the points every single time. I think we're going to get some refreshing looks at those types of situations now that we have a guy that didn't study under Bill and has this more modern type mindset towards the game. And for me, that's going to be an exciting component to watch.
Yeah, I will say, you guys would know this better than I would. There was a Colts-Patriots game back in the day. I think Kevin Falk was the running back. Didn't Belichick go for it on his own, like 30 or 35, and then didn't get it?
He did that.
Why,
get away from
why do you have to bring that up? Why do you have to bring that up, Manish? It's because I talk smack about the 76ers.
Like, I mean, the Bird is a huge Belichick fan. He essentially was calling him a dinosaur, and that play just jumped out.
That was 15 years ago, even longer. It might have been 20 years ago at this point.
That was 2009.
Okay. Like one situation that I can remember that it was like out of the box type, we're going for it. And it was like, we're trying to go for it to prevent Manning, because my defense sucks, from getting the ball back with a lot of time to go down and win the game.
All right, I want to pick on you. I got one more. Seahawks, Patriots Super Bowl. Be honest, as a Patriot fan, were you not ticked off that the Patriots did not call a timeout as the clock was winding down?
Oh, I was screaming. I was screaming on my TV.
That worked out, didn't it?
It did.
I mean, yeah, if you're not Pete Carroll.
I'm just saying that was an unconventional decision. I was in the building. I thought it was strange, but you know, Belichick knows more than I do, that's for sure.
I'm not sitting here trying to bash Belichick. I didn't want him even fired. I didn't even want him fired.
I'm just kidding around.
Get defensive now. Now you put me on the defensive. You're gonna get me all riled up on a tangent here.
Great. Well, let me channel my best Bill Belichick impersonation here, and we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. And I like Bill, we're on to the ad break. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. We will be right back. All right, we're back. We're back here on Between the Tackles, talking a whole bunch of stuff football-wise. I said before the episode started that this is going to be a short episode. We're 45 minutes in, and we just hit the ad break that you lovely listeners had to listen to all of our lovely sponsors.
Too much Six to Midnight talk.
Well, hey. We got to keep this PG a little bit going forward, okay? Midnight. I know we were getting a little silly nannies over here in the first half, but
I started it. I'm sorry.
It's true. You were bent over the bench. I didn't, like I said, I had to get that image out of my head, and here I am talking about Six to Midnight. Anyway, disgusting thoughts aside, guys, let's dig into playoff football as much as we might not want to, especially the way that this past weekend went down, I should say, where we kind of talked about a little bit at the beginning of the episode. Burgess, I'm going to throw it to you first. Out of all the games that we had to endure this weekend, I should say, did anything surprise you at all that really jumped out to you from the get-go? I mean, obviously there was no close games except for one that we talked about with Tampa and Washington there, but did anything really surprise you?
So the first thing that comes to mind is, and you know, we'll get to it when we talk about how we picked last week, but like the Chargers and how they just seemed, Justin Herbert just really had an off day against the Texans, and the Texans defense showed up, and you know, that's why they're moving on. For me, I was obviously invested in the Bills Broncos game most because of my hatred for the Bills. And I just thought that Sean Payton did not have a good day calling plays for the offense there for the Broncos. I think that they went in with a defensive game plan that they were going to let the Bills run all over them. And they clearly did that. They were just going to make James Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis beat them on the ground, because in the first half, this was a close game. And I think it went exactly the way that Sean Payton had wanted it to go. But come the second half, some of the offensive play calls that they had were just very conservative. And I understand they had a rookie quarterback. It gave me a lot of vibes from when Mac Jones as a rookie went into Buffalo in the playoffs, and just they just were non-competitive in that second half. I knew the game was over as soon as Will Lutz hit the upright at halftime. I'm like, that's it. That's it's going to be all over from here. But defensively, they didn't seem like they made any adjustments, or the adjustments they made completely backfired in the second half. And I felt that Sean Payton just didn't have it calling offensively. He missed a clear challenge when the game was still, I think, either a one or a two score game late in the third, early fourth, with a clear drop, and credit to Buffalo, they got right up to the line and snapped the ball, but Sean Payton didn't even have a look at that. So for me, that was definitely something. And then the final thought I have was the Vikings. You know, they have this thing where they have really good regular seasons, and then you know, come playoffs, they end up having some difficulty. Sam Darnold cost himself a lot of money in that performance that he had Monday night, unfortunately, as a newly anointed Sam Darnold guy here on the podcast. But yeah, those for me were the big things. Jordan Love obviously didn't have a good day either. And the most competitive game decided by a doink. I love that.
That's right. Well, you brought up Sammy D there, and my next subject is obviously letdowns. Manish, was Sammy D, your boy, the biggest letdown of this weekend, or do you got something else in mind? What's on your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say the most disappointing performances for the weekend were Sam Darnold and Justin Herbert. Just a real quick, Justin Herbert, I don't think I've ever seen a guy throw more interceptions in a playoff game than he had the entire season, which is the case with Justin Herbert, who had four picks in that game, only three during the season. I can make a legit case that two of those are not his fault. Be that as it may, did not play well. Sam Darnold, 2 weeks in a row now. You know, a few weeks ago, the Vikings were in position to be the number one seed and have a bye, and now they're out of the playoffs. It is really unfortunate. Darnold had the best season of his career by a mile. He showed that he can be a quality quarterback in this league, but I don't think the Vikings can bring him back as their starter, which is something I thought they easily could have a few weeks ago. But these last two games, coupled with the fact that they, you know, have a high draft investment in J.J. McCarthy, who will be healthy for the start of the offseason program, I believe, or at some point this summer, leads me to believe that Sam Darnold will be the quarterback somewhere else. Just unfortunate because he had such an incredible season, but really, you know, played subpar in the red zone 2 weeks ago against the Lions. And this Rams defense, which looks mediocre on paper, had a field day against him. Part of that was Chris Shula probably having his best game as a defensive coordinator. And part of that was, you know, Darnold not seeing the field as well as he had for the majority of this season, being a little bit slow in his decision-making. You know, when a team gives up 9 sacks, that's typically not always the offensive line's fault. And I think to Sam Darnold's credit, he said that, you know, a lot of those sacks were on him because he held the ball a little bit too long. Again, very unfortunate. The talent is clearly there. We saw that for the better part of 4 months. But in the two most critical games of the season, he just didn't perform to the level that he had prior to that. So, you know, I think Kevin O'Connell, class act, you know, said it in subtle terms. Incredible year to be working with Sam Darnold. Hopefully he'll have success. And now these are my words. I just don't believe that success is going to happen in Minnesota. I think he's going to go elsewhere. The other part of this playoff weekend, which I thought was interesting, maybe gets lost a little bit because the Eagles did beat the Packers. I did not think that Jalen Hurts played particularly well. You look on the stat sheet, 111 quarterback rating, no turnovers. You say, well, hey, Manish, what are you complaining about? But if you watch the game, he was clearly rusty, 13 for 21. Those two touchdowns, if you dissect them, the first one he had, I think, 6.7 seconds to throw, which is an eternity. Great job by the offensive line before he found Jahan Dotson in the end zone. The second one was a dump off, essentially, to Dallas Goedert, who really dragged his defender for 20 yards. One of the best plays of this season, I think. That quarterback needs to play much better. If they're going to have any real designs of going to the Super Bowl, you're hosting the Rams. You know, they're almost a touchdown favorite. But Jalen Hurts cannot play the way that he played last week and for the Eagles to expect to move on. I know that Saquon Barkley, you know, ran for 255 yards the first time these two teams played, but he's not running for 255 yards against the Rams in the rematch. The quarterback's going to have to step up. I was really disappointed, as disappointed as you can be in a team winning a playoff game, but I was really disappointed in the way that Jalen Hurts played. Coming off a concussion, pretty much rusty for about a month, so maybe you can excuse it that way, but he's going to have to step his game up significantly if the Eagles are going to not only beat the Rams, but potentially beat the Lions to get to the Super Bowl.
I'm just going to go ahead and go on record here and say if the Philadelphia Eagles end up going to the Super Bowl and winning the whole thing, Manish, you still won't be impressed with Jalen Hurts. You're gonna come on here and you're gonna go, you know what? That bum. Yeah,
you sound like right. You sound like my close friends who have been saying that to me for about 2 years.
I'm just kidding. Obviously, I love when you talk crap about Jalen Hurts. I mean, whether he deserves it or not, we'll find out. Obviously, like you said, you're not wrong with the stats, and obviously the concussion obviously did, you know, a little bit of damage there, where we'll see how they go up against the Rams. Burgess, real quick before we move on, are the Rams one of the scariest and most dangerous teams in this playoffs when they're fully healthy the way they are right now?
I think so. They got a fantastic head coach in Sean McVay, who's been there before, above average quarterback. Matt Stafford still playing at a high level as he ages. You know, we talked about this, back when the Rams blew the doors off the Patriots and then they beat the Bills. We're like, they're a very dangerous team down the stretch coming into the playoffs here. And I for one would be concerned, and I for one would not focus on blitzing Matt Stafford. Brian Flores did essentially the same thing that the Patriots did to Matt Stafford when they got torched. And the same thing happened on Monday night. So hopefully people can learn. Dial back the blitzes a bit because Matt Stafford is going to pick you apart.
He's going to puka all over your coops. That's what he's going to do. I just got to throw it out there. All right, guys, we are going to move on to the latest and greatest segment that, of course, the two of you are just you know, frothing at the mouth to talk about, because I can only imagine how it feels to drown in the misery of wallowing sorrow when you have to bow down to the weekend champion when it comes to picks. Let's go. That's right. That's right. To our listeners out there, I might have been in the basement for the regular season, but when the postseason starts, a champion emerges and his name is Hogan. And both of you can suck it because I won the weekend. Burgess, what's wrong? You look upset. Did something happen? Did your picks not go well?
I'm just regretting all the crap talking I did last week.
That's right.
You didn't just win the weekend. You kind of blew the doors off us this weekend. So I got to give you credit where credit's due.
That's right. I don't even know why I'm talking smack to you. Manish, how did you fare, buddy? How did you do? That's a real question.
I embarrassed many generations of my family by going 1-5, which is really unfathomable. I mean, you can pick names out of a hat and be better than 1-5. I promise to do better, 4 games this week. But 1-5 is just really ridiculously bad. It was just completely awful. If somebody else were 1-5, I would incessantly lampoon them. So I deserve all the criticism that you give me. Well warranted. I can't believe I was that bad. I mean, hopefully I don't miss out that much in these 4 games, but that was really a joke. It was a pitiful performance by me.
I was only one game better than you, so.
Well, guys, do you want to review your picks, or should we just mosey on along into the next weekend?
I say we move on.
I don't want to do that because I need to gloat a little bit more, finishing 4-2, champion of the weekend. So we're going to talk about it, where I took the Chargers. That was a egg on my face moment. And I also took the Steelers. So Saturday was just abysmal, which is awful because Saturday is usually the best day of the week because it's just awesome. You don't have to work and everything.
I was feeling good. I was in the lead after Saturday. I was feeling good.
Right. And then the rest of the weekend happened and yours truly nailed it for the rest, where I took the Bills, I took the Eagles, I took the Commanders, and I took the Rams. 4-2, baby. That's all I got to say. That's right. The crap talking maestro is back, just like I was in week 1 of last year, or whatever week we started doing this pick 'em crap. And I'm probably going to fall flat on my face going into next weekend. But you know what? You gotta enjoy the spoils while you can, and that's what I'm doing right now. So without further ado, gentlemen, let's dive on in to this next week schedule. And let me hear the picks. Manish, you are our resident basement dweller. Lead us off, my friend.
Okay, well, last week I said the two most fraudulent teams in the postseason were the Texans and the Commanders. They both won and made me look bad. So I'll say neither one of these teams are going to cover. They're pretty heavy underdogs. The Texans are getting 8.5 against the Chiefs in Kansas City. Kansas City well-rested, going for a three-peat. I think as much as Kansas City has been shaky this season, I think they'll have their way with C.J. Stroud and company. I don't think it'll be close, so I will go in that direction. Commanders in Detroit, great story. Jaden Daniels, I still think they're a fraudulent team. I'm going to stick with it. Sad to say that, since they're in the divisional round, so they're clearly not a fraudulent team. But for purposes of this betting discussion, they are getting 9.5 points, another huge number. The Lions are also rested and ready to avenge last year's playoff defeat in the championship game. They should have gone to the Super Bowl. I think they should have won the Super Bowl. I think they should think that as well. Their defense has looked shaky up until their previous game against the Vikings. They shut them down. I'm a believer in Aaron Glenn, possible future head coach of the New York Jets. I'm taking the Lions as the heavy favorite there. And then Sunday's games, I picked against my Eagles last week. Even though this week I do think they will win the game, 6 points is a little bit too rich for me. Burge, as you guys just talked about, the Rams are probably the scariest team that few people are talking about. And I think, you know, they're healthy. They're coming off their best defensive performance of the year. As I previously stated, Jalen Hurts is coming off a shaky performance. No chance that the Rams are going to yield anywhere close to 255 yards to Saquon Barkley like they did in week 8. There's a revenge factor there. I don't have a big concern about a West Coast team coming to the East Coast. I have a bigger concern about the Rams playing on a short week, which unfortunately the NFL schedule makers, you know, couldn't avoid because they played on a Monday. I like this to be a really tight game, perhaps even an overtime game. I'm picking the Eagles to win, but I'm definitely taking the 6 points and the Rams. Final game of the weekend is probably going to be the best game. It's a shame that this is not a conference championship game. It's instead, Ravens at Bills, a rematch of week four. 1 point home favorites, Buffalo. That sounds like an easy thing to do, right? Take the Bills as a home underdog. I'm taking the Ravens. I don't think it'll be a lopsided game like it was in week four. If you guys remember that game, I believe the Ravens' first play from scrimmage was like a 85 or so yard touchdown run by Derrick Henry. I do think that the Bills will keep it much more competitive, but this Ravens team is absolutely, in my mind, offensively, absolutely unstoppable. Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, I don't care who the receivers are. That team just puts up points. And then I'm going to go on a quick side here, go on a tangent for a second. Todd Monken, their offensive coordinator the last 2 years, is likely going to be the offensive coordinator for the NFL MVP, Lamar Jackson, during those 2 years. Lamar Jackson has never played better in his career than he has under Todd Monken. We talk about all these head coaching opportunities. I know Monken's getting some head coaching interviews, but to me, that guy's a home run hire. Whether it's the Bears, the Saints, whoever decides to hire him, that's the guy that should be hired in the cycle. I hope that he is. He's 58. Maybe there's a little age discrimination. Who knows? But he is worthy of a head coaching opportunity. He has done incredible things for that offense. And I just think that the Ravens are a monster team, home or away. It'll be a great game. I think a classic game. Lamar versus Josh. I think Lamar wins.
Burgess?
I love it.
Are you gonna take that? Okay.
I love it.
I was gonna say you're six to midnight over there now, aren't you?
I think we found our episode title.
right. That's how we roll around here. All right. So Manish, you got your picks in. Burge, let's hear it.
All right. So starting with the Saturday games, I'm taking the Texans plus the points against the Chiefs. The Chiefs this year have played a lot of close games. I expect that to continue. I do expect the Chiefs to win this game. Andy Reid coming off a bye. We know that means good things for Kansas City. But I do like this game to be close and the Texans to keep it competitive. So give me the Texans plus the points. I also, like Manish, big Lions fan. As much as, you know, like the Commanders, Lions minus 9.5, they're still my Super Bowl favorite out of the NFC. So I don't have too much more to say about that. Eagles-Rams, I'm taking the Rams plus the points, just like Manish. I think it's quite possible that the Rams actually do win this game because basically for everything that I've just said, the Rams are a very dangerous team at this point, especially with the head coach and Sean McVay and the quarterback, Matt Stafford. They've been here before. They know what it takes to win a Super Bowl. So I fully expect a competitive game. The Rams at the very least cover, but I have them to win this game outright. And for the final game, battle of the two front runners for the MVP, everybody knows where I'm going with this pick. It's going to be Lamar Jackson, who is going to win the MVP and this game. He's going to get over the hump of going into playing Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. They've met a few times in the playoffs, and Josh Allen has gotten the better of Lamar's Ravens. But like Manish said, this Ravens team is a wagon. If I'm going to make a pick right now out of the AFC, they're the team that I think that is going to go to the Super Bowl. And Lamar's finally going to get over that playoff stigma that he can't perform when the time crunch comes beyond the wild card weekend. So Ravens minus one. I'll be dressed in purple on Sunday for that game. You know, I hate the Baltimore Ravens as much as the next Patriot fan does, but I hate the Buffalo Bills. I can't even put a number on it. Infinitely more. We'll say infinitely more to cover my base. So give me the Ravens. Hogan.
Interesting. Go ahead. I mean,
disagree with me.
I was going to say, if you guys want the real answers for this weekend, you've come to the right source. So I'm going to give you the takes right here, right now. As much as it despises me to agree with Burgess, I am going to go with the Texans on the points there. Like you said, the Chiefs have been playing with fire most of the year, where they haven't really blown out anybody to a point. I think the Texans are going to at least keep it close, especially where they shocked me last week with what they did against the Chargers. I think I forgot that Nico Collins is arguably one of the best receivers in the league, where if he didn't get hurt this year, he could have really put up some crazy numbers, and he did in that Chargers game as well. So CJ Stroud, keep it close, my man. And if you can pull off the win, even better, because I want to see Patty Mahomes with his tail tucked between his legs, limping home out of the playoffs for once, so we don't have to listen to a damn three-peat. Next game, Lions. They are just a team of destiny at this point. I think they're firing on all cylinders. I think they're going to blow the doors off. Interestingly enough, I'm looking online right now at an ESPN for like the ticket prices are underneath each one. The Lions tickets are as low as $406. Everything else is like $200 or less for the other games. So that tells you how rocking Detroit's going to be for that game coming in with Washington there. So yeah, give me Detroit, even with the big old points there. I like them. I think you both took the Rams, right? You were all excited about the Rams. They puka all over your coops. Yeah. Give me the Eagles. Give me Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is going to take care of business. Suck it, Manish. He's going to absolutely spit in your face, and he's going to rock
it. I'm an Eagles fan. I'm an Eagles fan.
It's fine. I'm just telling you why you're wrong and why I'm right and why the Eagles are going to take care of business. 6 points. Okay. They'll be fine. It's just how it is. You'll be excited. You'll be excited to be so wrong. That's how I'm trying to put this for you. So give me the Eagles -6. That's fine. And then you both took the Ravens. You're sitting here just glazing them up, saying they're all this team that's so good. Lamar Jackson, this and blah, blah, blah. Nope. Give me the Bills. Bills are at home. Bills are at home. And I think that Josh Allen is going to take care of business. They're going to do it. They're going to take care of it. And Baltimore, as much as you love your little Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry running around party, Lamar still has to throw the ball once in a while. And remind me what happened last time he threw the ball in the playoffs. Oh, that's right. They lost, unfortunately, to the Chiefs. I mean, obviously, I would have preferred Baltimore to win that game last year when it happened. But give me the Bills. Underdogs at home, crazy to me, +1. So there you go. There are the picks, guys. I think we finally hit everything on the agenda, unless I'm missing something or if there's anything else you guys want to talk about. What do you got? Oh, my God. All right, for our listeners out there, Manish has a little drawing for us. If you got to go on YouTube and watch this episode now. He drew 6 to midnight for a reference for those of you who are puzzled as to why I kept saying that. The clock shows it all, and I specifically said clock with an L in there, so don't get excited, okay? That's where we're going with this. That's right. This was a zany episode, but you know I love hanging out with you guys and talking football and clocks, not the other word. So, gentlemen, without further ado, I wish you the best of luck, but not really for your picks this weekend. I hope we see some good football for once instead of the dog crap that we saw last weekend. And hopefully the Chiefs are eliminated. Hopefully my picks are all right. And that's what I got for you. Any last thoughts, gentlemen?
Go Ravens.
Go Ravens.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you guys would hope for that. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Burge.
Peace.
Later.